What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast, on the lookout for protesters threatening to delay our start because of the unethical treatment of its workhorses. Today, ask the Kaiser Chiefs which South London-based manager could be playoff-bound, and they'll chirp, I predict a row at QPR. This is really bad now, guys. We're all Wednesday, but we're wobbly on Saturdays, and the Orient Express is close to reaching its destination. The destination in question being League One. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. Well, we're getting toward the home stretch now, aren't we? We're probably on it, to be fair. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams, here to talk through the best of the Football League from the weekend alongside Adrian Clark and Sam Parking. Hello, chaps.
Hello, Matt.
Hello. Yeah, game face on, Matt. Really. Yeah, we're getting that business end feel now, aren't we? So, yeah, let's have it.
Stuff getting sorted out. Poor Sam, poor QPR. We'll come on to them soon. Don't worry. First, though, how about this? Our friends at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer where you can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It's for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this pod. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. Well, as Adrian says, we are very much at the end of the season, known as business. So first up, let's talk ups, downs and departures. Well, at the weekend, Leighton Orient nearly got themselves promoted. Some confusion on Saturday as to whether or not they had gone up from League Two after their win at Sun. Even boss Richie Wellens wasn't sure.
Yeah, we actually thought, the way the crowd responded, we thought we was up, but obviously then we found out that we wasn't up. So you want to celebrate, but you want to get off the pitch and be professional and make sure that we're ready for Gillingham on Tuesday night.
But Bradford's win at Rochdale, which we'll talk about later, means the champagne is on ice. It will be uncorked if they avoid defeat at Gillingham on Tuesday. Either way, we've known for a while they're going up, so we ought to say some nice things about them. Sam Wellens is somebody that you know well. His effect in East London has been transformative, I would suggest.
Yeah, and worth a mention for Martin Ling as well, who I've worked with and obviously identified that Richie Wellens was the right guy to change Leighton Orient's fortunes around, really, and catapult them to the success that they've had this year. I really rate him. I think he's incredibly detailed. I think there's a clear identity every club he's gone into, the style of play, how he wants to play football. And I think, even though it was finished by the pandemic, he had that Swindon squad from the start of that season. He's had this Leighton Orient squad from the start of this season, and he's gonna win the championship on both occasions. And I think that pretty much sums up the potential that he's got, how good he is. You know, quite a young manager. He's had some dodgy gigs, hasn't he, at Oldham, Doncaster, really up against it, and at Salford. But when he's actually been given an opportunity to go and sign, to work with the players, to get that imprint across, I think it's clear as day. He is a very, very good manager potentially to go and work at a higher level. And what I've loved about this team is the structure, I suppose, how good they are defensively. I think they're breaking records in that regard, 23 clean sheets now, and that variety of goal scorer, not been reliant on two front men, even one front man. It's been collection, you know, scoring set pieces, wonder goals from fullback, wingers chipping in, you know, across the piece, really. So it is the essence of a really good 11, and a lot of that down to the manager, who top notch in my opinion.
Yeah, you've got to say that, Adrian, haven't you, that it's about the way he set the team up, because as Sam mentions, the defensive record is superb, but going the other way, we've only got one player in double figures for goals this season. But if you can share the load in that regard and you're not going to concede many, then you're going to find yourself higher up the table than lower.
For sure, yeah. No, I think Sam's picked out exactly the right sort of strengths of this team. They haven't been reliant on one goal pick, have they, up top? So I think that makes a difference. Everyone's chipped in. And in terms of the organisation, I mean, incredible. I mean, at home, 15 clean sheets in 21 home games. I mean, if you're a visiting side, you're up against it to score a goal. It's remarkable. And I think another telling stat is that set pieces, which are so important at League Two level, they've conceded 5 all season. Which again is the joint lowest. It's very, very impressive. And the recruitment, I think, has been good. Joby McEnough, obviously friend of the show, has told us the ambition was to go up, told us they had a budget probably to match it. So they were under pressure to do it this season, and they've done it very, very easily, haven't they? So, yeah, well done. Well done to all concerned.
I think they've had 7 1-0s at home, 1-0 victories. And I'm sure Richie Wellens, like, you know, if you're in his office behind closed doors, would say that he would have loved to have had more potent strikers. But I think that underlines a good coach, doesn't it? A good manager. He's not moaned, has he? He's got on with it, and he's found the way. And if you think back to that Swindon side, Doyle and Yates, and that was why they were so successful. He had, as Clarkey just coined, a gold pig in Doyle, who did very little else. He had Yates, who was a workaholic, really, alongside him, but two players in tandem who invariably he picked to spearhead his side. He's not had anywhere near that level of potency. He hasn't had a prolific striker. And that, yeah, again, I think that just shows you that this is a guy who can change things around and can get the best out of what he's got at his disposal.
It's adapted as well. Sotirio, for example, more of an attacking midfielder, has played up front lately. Kelman's been fit and available, but he's given him a chance in that role, seen something, and he's delivered for him. So, yeah, he's tried players in different positions. Not many players in that side have featured every single week. So they've had a few injuries. He's had to mix and match it a bit. But, yeah, they've been the best team by far.
So they will be in League One surely next season. No such luck for Forest Green Rovers. They became the first team to be officially relegated in the EFL this season. A home hammering by Barnsley saw their brief sojourn into the third tier come to a swift end. I was going to put a clip of Duncan Ferguson in here, but I couldn't get the translation absolutely accurate. He wasn't very happy that they conceded 4 set piece goals. I can tell you that much. Do they stick with him next year, Adrian? He didn't know much about League One. He presumably knows even less about League Two. He seems keen on sticking around, but we've said it was a curious decision to appoint him, albeit they probably would have gone down anyway, wouldn't they?
I think they would have gone down. I think they were always up against it, Forest Green. But this is a really difficult decision for the club to make, because Duncan Ferguson is a big name. He's clearly got a decent relationship with the owner. But the bottom line is, has the owner seen enough at Forest Green from Duncan Ferguson to give him a budget to rebuild Forest Green's playing staff? I would say no. I think in terms of his motivational skills, I'm sure he's got them, but he hasn't really got more out of the players than the previous manager. Tactically, would you say that Duncan Ferguson has nailed it? No. I was there for the win against Sheffield Wednesday, which was actually very good tactical performance. But the bottom line is, they haven't kept enough clean sheets. They've not scored anywhere near enough goals. And when they've been in good positions, they've thrown them away. You know, they've lost leads. So I think that Duncan Ferguson is using good deflection tactics at the moment. He's throwing all of his players under the bus in the hope that they will give him the opportunity to build a brand new squad at Forest Green. If I'm in charge of Forest Green, I'm not giving him the cash to do that, because I haven't seen enough from him, I'm afraid. So big decision for them to make.
Do you think they can be competitive in the third tier, Sam, if they were to come back up again? Or is it just, you know, there's a limit to where clubs can get to, and maybe Forest Green's is League Two?
I would have thought that Forest Green would have stabilised in League One probably, and be knocking on the door possibly of the Championship even by now. I mean, that may sound like a bit of a reach, but I felt they were on a really good path. They've always been rumoured to be good payers, you know, the type of club that could recruit players and have a go at it, I suppose. So I think it's all going to be down to the recruitment this summer. And obviously they've lost two people in that regard in the last 12 months or so. Richard Hughes obviously got a lot of credit for putting that team together under Rob Edwards. Stevie Grieve in January of this year is coming for some flack for these signings that haven't worked. So it's going to be, you know, fascinating which way they go about it. A lot of young players in the squad, a lot of young players being blooded in the last few weeks and months, and whether there's been a slight alteration in the plan to move towards a model of getting younger players and getting the resale value, then we'll have to wait and see with that. But yeah, there's been a real lack of creativity, lack of goals. It's a big job in the summer. And I've seen nothing, as Clarkey alluded to there, other than the Sheffield Wednesday, to suggest that Duncan Ferguson's the right man. But the noise is coming out of the club. is that he's here to stay, which I don't really understand, having had zero impact, but we'll wait and see on it.
Their record against the top half teams, because they've completed the set, basically, of current top half teams anyway. So they've played 24, won 2, drawn 3, lost 19. And in 15 of those 24 matches, they didn't score a goal. You know, they got 9 goals in those 24 matches as a total. I think there was a lack of belief there and a lack of adventure from Forest Green. And I think they've gone down with the weakest whimper I can remember. They're not trying to score goals. They're almost trying to damage limitation. I've not been impressed.
Well, and it'd be interesting to know is Del Vince's idea in this appointment, because you felt with the contingency plan after Edwards left was kind of someone of similar ilk that came in Birchnell. And yes, he'd lost the spine of the side. The goal scoring threat had gone in Matt and Stevens. And obviously the wide players were integral, as you know, probably as integral as the manager and his assistant in Rob Edwards. But yeah, the thought process to completely, it feels, change tack middle of the season seems slightly odd. Maybe it was a bit of a rescue mission, but if that's gone horribly wrong, as it looks to have done, then surely you make a change now and get back on the right path. So yeah, it'd be fascinating if he stays with Duncan Ferguson and what type of football they churn out in the bottom division next year.
Well, if nothing else, it was the season that Duncan Ferguson learned that chips were vegan. There has been a managerial departure in the EFL. Daryl Clark has been sacked by Port Vale. Sam, I'm just looking at the replies on Twitter to the club statement on this. Andy Crosby going to take charge for the rest of the season. Supporters aren't happy. We know what happened with Daryl Clark last season. He took them up in incredibly difficult circumstances personally for him. They are on the fringes of the relegation zone in League One and they're on a long winless run. But still, what, 6 points above the drop, albeit they've played a game more than Cambridge below them. This feels like a strange one, not only to get rid of him, but then to put his number two in charge rather than have a total change for the final four games of the season.
Yeah, I don't get that at all. Andy Crosby's worked with him a long time, I think, and you'd imagine they're quite aligned in how they want to go about things. So I don't understand it. I was really surprised, probably as surprised as I've been with any kind of dismissal this season across the board. And I think that's built from not only his promotion last year, but the relationship he seemed to have with the hierarchy at Port Vale. Him and it's Carroll Shanahan, isn't it? And, you know, been brilliant owners for the club, been a brilliant, obviously, couple of seasons for them getting into League One against all the odds last year, really. I didn't fancy them at all. But it's always felt that was a real team effort and that he was a massive part of it and that he was going nowhere. So, yeah, I noted the replies this morning. I've seen that David Flitcroft's come in for a little bit of stick as well, again, pointing towards January activity or a lack of. So he seems to be getting a fair little bit of flack above the manager. Yeah, the results are horrendous and the discipline has been terrible. I think 7 sendings off. Yeah. I think 4 in the last 3 games or something. So yeah, you can't always, you know, blame that on the manager or his staff. It's ill discipline from the players. Yeah, ultimately it comes from the top maybe at times, but I wouldn't, you know, lay that at Daryl Clark's door. But yeah, really surprising. Bit of panic maybe with the games left and just the 6-point gap, but I'm sure they'll be fine. And yeah, interesting to see who takes the reins there and whether David Flitcroft remains in his role.
Got Ipswich and Plymouth still to play in those final 4 games. Adrian, I do often think in times like this, we sympathise with the manager who's lost his job and we are right to do so. But at the same time, kind of like Sean Dyche with Burnley last season, it can actually be to the benefit of Daryl Clark because he doesn't get the relegation on his CV. Everybody thinks he's been hard done by and he'll be first in the queue for any number of lower end League One, top end League Two jobs that come up, won't he?
It's a good point. Yeah, I think his stock will remain high. What he did last season in the circumstances, you know, terrible personal tragedy, losing his daughter, I think was just amazing. So it feels quite a brutal decision. And I think that by and large, he's done an excellent job at Port Vale. The running is a bit scary. Plymouth and Fleetwood at home. I mean, Fleetwood at home is the winnable one. They've got Ipswich and Charlton away. There is a scenario if they lost all 4 and Cambridge continued to fly that maybe they could get dragged in. I think that's why they've pressed the panic button. I agree with Sam when he touched on recruitment. I'm not sure they brought in that many good players. Obviously, Ellis Harrison, top scorer, so that was a good signing last summer. But the others on the Massey, for example, 2 goals, 2 assists. Few of the others have been in and out of the team. All the loanees that came in, and I'm assuming Flitcroft was behind that. Very few of those loanees have now down a regular starting position. They've been in and out of the team. So, you can't just lay it at Daryl Clark's door, in my opinion.
All right, well, we'll see if Port Vale can save themselves. They're not going to feature in our next section, though, as we muse upon football matches of significance from the weekend past. It's the weekend review. In simple terms, we're going to start in the Championship, and Millwall took on Preston at the Den with both teams dreaming of promotion. It was the Lions who tamed their Lancashire opponents a 2-0 win, giving them a 3-point cushion in the playoff places. Obviously a significant win, Clarky, given who it came against, but also because Millwall had gone 4 without one before this.
Yeah, this was a tight, edgy game that felt like a playoff already. I think that both teams were quite cagey. They didn't play their normal game. And as a consequence, it became a bit of a grind. And it was a grind that was decided by a front partnership of Fleming and Bradshaw. Brilliant cross from Fleming for Bradshaw's header. And then Fleming, from that sort of number 10 role, makes a brilliant run, I've got to say, from one of those trademark long diagonal free kicks. Big centre-half nods it into the box. And how Preston have let Fleming go unmarked into the danger zone, I'm not quite sure. And that was it, really. I mean, they only had 6 shots, Millwall, in the game. I think they're only 14 in total, but they're efficient, aren't they? They can dig in. And it's those kind of scrappy games that where Millwall come into their own, in my opinion. I think if it's an open game, they're never quite as... I think they struggle to compete with the very best. If it's scrappy, if it's tight, if it's a dog of a match, you kind of always back Millwall to maybe come through it. So looking at the breakdown of their goals, 22 set-piece goals, brilliant, the highest in the division. 22, the exact same open play goals, which is the third worst in the division. And when you've got 2 very good strikers like Fleming and Bradshaw, that is a bit of a surprise. So, yeah, that's where their shortcomings lie. But they did enough to win this game, and it's a big old 3-pointer for Millwall.
Clarky, I'm going to come on to Luton in a minute. So them aside and Middlesbrough aside, of all the teams that are jostling and been unable to grab that playoff position at the moment, would you be wary of Millwall if they were to make it, if you were the Hatters or Middlesbrough, because of that game plan? In essence, over 2 legs as well, Gary Rowett maybe shutting down a leg and then that prowess, especially from the dead balls at the Den.
Definitely. You've seen it's not always the most attractive team that gets promoted, is it? It just isn't. Huddersfield almost ground their way to it last year, didn't they? Even though there's a bit more to them with that side that they had. No, I think they're good match players, aren't they, Millwall? And when you've got, like I say, 2 finishers at the top end of the pitch and 2 very good centre-halves and a pretty good structure, then you're halfway there, aren't you? Savile's been brilliant for them this season. They've got that solid spine, bit of experience. Yeah, I wouldn't fancy playing them in the playoffs. I think, yeah, there'd be ones to avoid.
So Millwall play Rowett's old club Birmingham in South London on Tuesday. Preston go to Swansea on Wednesday. Luton Town, oozing class and swatting aside opponents. Not my words, the words of former Luton Town striker Sam Parkin. The big fella moved to such praise after the Hatters beat the Millers of Rotherham 2-0 in their own backyard to further tighten their grip on a playoff spot and ensure they stay in the conversation for automatic promotion. Unbeaten in 10, Sam, and the previously scouted, right back at the start of the season, Carlton Morris, with one of the goals of the season here.
Yeah, against former club as well. He was on loan at Rotherham on a couple of occasions. And off the top of my head, I can't think of a better two-footed striker in the second tier right now. Another classy goal on his left side. And the reason I went for those lines, Matt, and also... I said it surprised me, and someone pulled me up on it yesterday. I've not replied as of yet, but it surprised me because I wouldn't say they snuck in last season, but they made it into the playoffs last year. And to go and do it again with the change of manager as well, I think is unbelievable. And I have been surprised. I've been surprised by the lack of a stutter in the last few weeks as well. 6 wins and 3 draws. I think over the last 12, only Burnley have got more points, just 1 point more than the Hatters. This is incredible consistency. Rotherham had won 3 out of their last 4 at home. They'd lost 2 in 8 at the New York Stadium or whatever it's called since Christmas. I mean, it's a difficult game against a side who put you under pressure. And I thought the ultimate compliment really is that Matt Taylor's been a 4-3-3 in recent times since they've had this good run. I think they smashed Blackburn, didn't they, at the infancy of their form picking up. And he went to a 3-5-2 here and it didn't work. So I think he tried to match Luton up here possibly. And they only actually improved when he changed back to the 4-3-3, which has got them some joy. So Luton was so comfortable in this game. So comfortable. Don't think they had a shot on target, Rotherham. 15 shots to 4. Luton actually a little bit disrupted towards the end through injury, players playing out of position. But at the start, Burke, Bradley, Lockyer, we haven't said that at all this season. That was the back three. They've been playing fullbacks across their back line. And that emphasises, again, just how good they are right now. So, yeah, it gave Amari Bell the opportunity to go back to wing back. And getting defensive players back could be all as important as the goals at the other end of the pitch. So, yeah, brilliant, brilliant result for Luton. They're in ridiculous vein of form and looks like they're going to go into the playoffs full of confidence.
Yeah, they say they'll need to spend £10 million upgrading Kenilworth Road if they get promoted, but they'll get £100 million for going up. So that should soften the blow for that a little bit. Rotherham only 3 points above the drop zone. They do have a game in hand on 6 of the teams below them. You would think they've got enough to stay up, but we shall see. Quite the contrast in moods for QPR and Coventry just now. Rangers' latest home humbling came against the Sky Blues, who left West London with 3 goals and 3 points in the bag on Saturday. They were briefly in the playoff places until Blackburn's draw with Hull on Saturday night. Our friend and QPR fan Flo Lloyd Hughes on Twitter said, "If it wasn't clear before he was hired, it's blindingly obvious now that Ainsworth is in well over his head. The team are not playing well, but they are being set up to fail." Now, here's what Ainsworth had to say post-match.
"The second goal kills me because we're not reading the danger. We're trying to play on the edge of their box, which is great. I want to encourage that, but get it right. But if there is a breakaway, we have to read that danger. We're so open. It's just... oh, the boys, I feel for the boys because they're good lads. Trying to work with them really hard. We were too open there. And then the third goal, we're at 10 men, you know, and we're all at sea. And it's not really a 3-0, but it is because Coventry have scored 3 times today, you know, and we've got to be better than that. We've got to be better, definitely, when we're locking out in defence. We're too easy to score against, and that's been the story of a long time, not just today."
Adrian, you often go for your 12-game form marker. QPR have lost 10 of them. This is only ending one way, isn't it? I mean, it's only going to be Reading getting that points deduction, which might save them because they don't look like they can buy a goal, never mind a win at the moment, particularly at home.
Yeah, I think you're right. If Queen's Park Rangers do survive relegation, they'll have been lucky to survive relegation. It's been a horrendous run. 0 new manager bounce. And yeah, just lots of red flags, really. The way they start matches for starters, I think they've conceded inside the opening 10 minutes in 5 of their last 6 matches. You know, that's, you know, talk about getting off on the wrong foot. In this match, they went to a 4-4-2, had just 6 shots. You know, it's poor. I think Dickey and Dunn on that right-hand side, you saw the way that Coventry undid them. They really struggled with those quick breakaways. There's a distinct lack of pace down that side. And I think that Coventry exploited that quite superbly. So yeah, it's all going horribly wrong for QPR at the moment. I'd like to praise Coventry. 19 clean sheets, an all-time record for the Sky Blues. I mean, well done to Mark Robbins, the coaching staff, the players. That is an incredible return because Coventry don't have one of the biggest budgets in the Championship. They can't go out and recruit whoever they like. Their success is based a lot on very good coaching, and I think 19 clean sheets tells you plenty about what Mark Robbins and his coaching staff have done this season. Absolutely superb. I mean, there was a brilliant save from Ben Wilson, who's been great this season, to deny Elias Chair. Got to say that. But in the main, this was a quality performance. The two star players for Coventry, Gus Hamer and Victor Gyökeres, were the architects of this win. I mean, that that partnership, I think, has spawned five goals. Jaime Tejocarez, we had two in this match, but it's been five assists all season from Jaime Tejocarez. These two players they're ready for the Premier League. I'm not sure about how many other Sky Blues players are ready to shine at the highest level just yet, but those two certainly are. And if they're red hot going into the playoffs, then they'll be hard to stop. We just talked about Millwall being ones to avoid. Well, if Coventry can sneak in there, and we know how tight they keep it at the back, and if they can get Hamer and Jokeres flying for those potential three games, I wouldn't write them off either. So, and what a story that would be for Coventry City.
If we're having friends of the pod being quoted, their critiques of games, I'll give you some of my brother's input from Saturday at QPR. I can't. Have you got a bleep button? It was dismal. It was absolutely dismal. I mean, I said on Saturday, I don't get the team selection. And I'm not sure if I got that exactly right. Well, I definitely would go along with he didn't get the shape. He doesn't get the ideas right at the moment. Laird and Willock were the two I picked out that were phenomenal early part of the season. But, you know, they're coming on and not affecting things. Chair was taken off, and I think that was to much derision inside the stadium. But I don't know what's happened to him in the last few games either. So, you know, I felt with a fit squad to choose from, they'd have more than enough quality to get those few points they need. But it's desperate. It's desperate. And that, you know, chest banging, finger wagging celebrations at the Hawthorns on Easter Monday looks a little bit foolish now in the wake of this. Sheaf and Hamer, as Clarkie said, absolutely ran this game.
Three turnover goals, all lost in midfield, weren't they? Mm. I mean, the field, Dizel, Axis didn't work.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're playing a two-man midfield, you know, against a three, you've got to be good at what you do and just lumping it aimlessly towards Dykes and Chris Martin, who are completely on the periphery of the game, just bear no fruit whatsoever. So just, I don't know what's the terminology, but I'm going to go over there on Wednesday, I think, to the game. Pay for me a ticket, just because I don't know. I'm a sucker for punishment. I don't know why. I've got to go and witness it with my own eyes. But it sounded really bleak at the weekend, and I think the fans have been going and turning up and trying to support the side. But I think it's difficult to watch after so much promise under the last previous regimes, and right now it looks like they've got disappointment wrong.
Definitely. Just a quick one on Coventry. They got Blackburn on Wednesday away from home. That's a huge game for them. Wanted to get Sam's thoughts. Jokeres reached the hallowed 20-goal mark, and he wanted to do a speech in the dressing room. I wonder what your views on giving a speech for getting to the 20-goal mark is all about. Would that have happened back in the day, and what would the reaction have been? Apparently, the lads basically shouted him down and just barracked him the whole time, and he couldn't really get to the end of what he wanted to say.
I like it. I'm thinking about, like, you know, when you got up and sung at Christmas and stuff like that, and that's normally over a mealtime, isn't it? So there's just so much ammunition to get thrown. And I think a dressing room is a similar type of domain. There's a lot of, like, sarnies and water bottles and
tie-ups,
dirty pants that are just going to get lobbed in your direction. So, no, I like the idea. I like the premise of it, but you're never going to get by with 18 testosterone-filled chaps on the back of a 3-point canter in West London. It's quite tight in there as well. You're not going to get a stage in the QPR away dressing room. It would have been a skip, wouldn't it? But there's not much room. There's not much room for performing.
He's up for Championship Player of the Year alongside Josh Brownhill and Tuba Akpom. So maybe if he wins that, they'll give him a microphone and a stage, and the audience will be a bit more respectful. Right, Sheffield United are not for giving up second place.
John Egan therefore moving to the side of the back.
The Blades put four past Cardiff at Bramall Lane on Saturday. It means they're 4 points clear of third Luton with a game in hand. So I sort of wonder, Sam, whether the more interesting thing in this game is Cardiff, who all of a sudden have lost four of six. They've only won one of those. They're only above Reading on goal difference. And that rearranged Rotherham versus Cardiff game, which was abandoned because of the waterlogged pitch, is on Thursday of next week. That is an absolute whopper now, isn't it, for Sabri and co?
Yeah, they got Huddersfield at home as well, haven't they? So they're going to have to try and take care of their home games, but their record's been really bad in front of their own supporters this season. There was a lot to like in that first half. I think 10 shots to five in Cardiff's favour. They looked edgy, Sheffield United. They were poor with the ball. It was quite an adventurous setup, I felt, for Cardiff with a three-pronged attack, in essence, with Philogene, Etete and Cabba. That said, it was quite conservative across the midfield for NG playing at the right side of the four and Joe Rawls on the left side, which I've not seen too often in his career. So it was probably a well-balanced side. And as I said, they had a number of opportunities, just glaringly bad individual errors. You know, the goalkeeper also for the first, you know, when you've worked so hard to get yourselves in front in such a huge game, he was able, McAtee, to canter past McGuinness, just a little drop of the shoulder, and then the shot, I mean, it should have been saved. McGuinness went on to make another mistake, and yeah, if Milner, strong from set pieces, Sheffield United aren't far behind either. I think they're second in that regard. Two wonderful balls. You can't do a great deal about what Tommy Doyle's doing from set pieces at the moment. He is exquisite. Beautiful striker of the ball. Sander Berger got the second assist for Kieran Clark, who I had no idea was at Sheffield United. I turned to Matt on the gantry at Chelsea at the weekend and said, some bloke's just scored. I've got no idea who he is. Oh, Kieran Clark's at Sheffield United.
I did that with Liam Delap and Troy Parrott for Preston, believe it or not, this weekend.
He's played seven times this season, so I'm going to cut myself some slack.
Silver Fox, Silver Clarkie, yeah.
Yeah, I was kind of like, who's that handsome chap who's wheeling away? I recognise him, but I can't get him. So, yeah, he got himself a goal. They were, you know, I suppose, I wouldn't say patched up, but George Baldock played at right centre-back, so maybe that had a little bit of an effect in the first half, but I'd rather credit Cardiff. And I think they go into those games that you mentioned, Matt, not feeling too bad about things. They had that recent win over Blackpool and obviously were good for 45 minutes and just individual lapses let them down here. Sheffield United, you know, we said over across the course of the last month that this slight change from Paul Heckingbottom, the more minutes for Doyle and McAtee in particular, could prove to be pivotal. And I mean, the stats back it up. They lost two back-to-back games, Middlesbrough and Millwall. The five subsequent games, all comps, all 1-0. They won three, but lost two. Since those guys have come into the side, he's obviously changed the shape. It was a front two. Now he's got those kind of dual number 10s in Njai and McAtee supporting McBurnie. They've won five out of six. One defeat against Burnley when they had Wes Fodringham sent off early doors. So it's been a tactical tweak from the manager that ultimately is going to likely see them promoted in second quite comfortably. So, yeah, the big moment of the season, Paul Heckingbottom gambled, changed things, and it's paid off big time.
All right, so they're heading for the Premier League, it looks like. We're going to League One, but I think we should probably give up guessing who's going up automatically and just enjoy the ride. Ipswich are up to second after they hit Charlton for six, with Plymouth top on Wednesday third. It's the latter two we're going to look at whilst giving a nod to Ipswich securing at least a playoff place. But let's start with the Devon Derby. Matt Butcher bringing home the bacon for the Pilgrims in a tight game against Exeter, Adrian. So they're 2 points clear of third, Chef Wed. They've got this game in hand as well. They go to Shrewsbury on Tuesday. Then they've got three successive home games. And bar that wobble against Lincoln the other week, we know how strong they are at home. Obviously, they're desperate to avoid the playoffs after getting shellacked in them last season. Do you think that they've got the staying power over this last little bit of the season to be top two?
I think they probably have. Yeah, I think that Plymouth have put themselves into a position where they're favourites alongside Ipswich to get the top two. The fixture list looks okay. This was a real banana skin game for them. Obviously, a local derby at Exeter, who would have been so up for this game it's unreal. So to negotiate it with a 1-0 win, even though it was a scruffy 1-0 win, will give them great heart and belief, I think. They didn't really play. I think they had 36.8% of possession. Didn't really play their normal game, but they ground it out and they scored from a clever short corner. Obviously, it was deflected in the end. I did enjoy there's a bunch of sort of ruffians in the corner when Butcher was taking the free kick, sort of clambering over the fence, almost trying to hit him or to try and put him off and name calling him. You could see that they were swearing at him. And of course, as soon as they score, seconds later, the Plymouth players run to that corner and it all got a little bit lively. But yeah, no, I think Schumacher will be delighted. Quick one for Sam on this. The manager was full of praise for his skipper and his choice of ends from the toss-up. He said that Edwards came to him before the game and said, look, if we win the toss, what about we let Exeter kick towards their big bank or whatever they call it in the first half, because I know that they like going there in the second half. And it was a decision they agreed on, and that's what happened. So during a really sort of tight non-event of a first half, Exeter lost that advantage of playing towards their big home supporting end. Is that a thing, Sam?
It's intimidating. Scored on my debut at that end. Vociferous. Yeah. Suck it in. I can understand it in a derby, yeah, because there would have been, I was going to say, no standing room, but it wouldn't have made sense. Yeah, it would have been rammed in there. Yeah, and they'd have got behind them, wouldn't they? So, yeah, can understand that. Can understand that. And Will Ameson got a bit confused because he's a former Plymouth player, I believe, and he was the Exeter defender who turned it past his own goalkeeper. So there was a few narratives there, but I mean, the biggest one, that's just a colossal victory for him. I mean, I've been really concerned about them, especially since we had him on, and he was such a genius, Stephen Schumacher, top fella. But I've been concerned about some of the results. So I think that's the perfect way to get back on track and take this right down to the wire.
Should never have doubted that Schumacher would get back in pole position pretty quickly, I suppose. We thought Sheffield Wednesday were back on the form horse after beating Stanley last weekend, but their automatic promotion hopes in danger of going for a Burton. They lost 3-2 against the Brewers at the Pirelli Stadium. And Burton, Sam, making a late case to be the promotion disruptors, that win against Barnsley over Easter, and now this too. Mark Helm getting it, 2 senior goals for the first time in his career, his first 2 senior goals. But can you tell me what's happening with Sheffield Wednesday? Because they had one hand on the, I don't know, if not trophy, promotion place, and they're doing a really good, convincing job of trying to chuck it all away.
No, I can't tell you what's going on. I think that psychologically they seem to have a bit of an issue. The massive concern for me, and yeah, I wanted to give Burton the credit they deserve because their turnaround has been unbelievable. They had 7 points from their first 12 games, if you remember. They lost 7 out of their first 8, which is just remarkable to be sitting where they are with such a cushion over the teams that are in trouble. Sheffield Wednesday, 1 win in 8, and they've only faced 2 teams that are currently above 12th in that run. And that's what makes it so concerning. I think it would be a big help to get Windass back. I think he was having a really good season. I think he's on the cusp of returning. That could just turn things around. Ihikwe's just returned as well to the bench at the weekend. I think Smith's been hindered by an injury. So there are players coming back in. So that should help them. But I don't know. I've said, you know, consistently that Ipswich are a better side in terms of the style of play, the consistency in the style, what you're going to see. Plymouth as well, I would say. Sheffield Wednesday, I think, have got good individuals, but I don't think there's probably the togetherness that there is in terms of the performances at the other two clubs. So this is, yeah, real worrying time for them. I think in this game, they did a great job, Burton. They recognised Bannon's threat, or you know, Bannon's ability to control games, and they pressurized him. They had Shaughnessy in front of the back three, so he could work as a little bit of a shield if the ball did go direct into their front players, which was Patterson and Gregory. Brayford played right of a back three. Oshalaja played right wing back. You know, there was some clear tactical decisions that Dino Marmaria made, and they really paid off. misses a side as well. You might know this lad, Matt. They've got a loanee from Forest, Dale Taylor up front. They got Zach Ashworth from West Brom playing. Helm, that you mentioned, scored the two goals. These are guys who've hardly played any league football before in their careers. I think Ashworth played twice for West Brom. Other two, this is the infancy of their EFL careers. So, yeah, this is another remarkable result from Burton. And if Sheffield Wednesday don't win at Bristol Rovers and Ipswich take maximum points, then they're going to be hoping that Plymouth falter, because that'll be a decent gap that's developed between Ipswich and Wednesday, and they'll have a game in hand as well.
It's Ipswich have got Barnsley and Posh away.
Mm. They got the worst run. Yeah,
if they can negotiate Barnsley and Posh away from home, they're up Ipswich. Those are the games Sheffield Wednesday will have their eye on, I guess.
Wonder if Wednesday are just doing their best for the footballing narrative and thinking, well, we'll go to the last day of the season against Derby, try and get some revenge for that last day of the Championship season a few years ago, knock Derby out of the playoffs and pinch second place. That would be pretty football if that happened. You mentioned Posh there, Clarkey. They were beaten in their derby this weekend. Cambridge, one of the dozen or so clubs you have an affection for. So you must have been dancing in the streets of the street where you live after this victory.
Oh, I was, yeah. Yeah, I got a lot of affection for the nightclubs, or the former nightclubs of Cambridge, more than the football club, if I'm honest. But yeah, I do hope they win. My dad's a season ticket holder. He's been telling me Liam Bennett, the right back, has been having a storming season. So it was good to see him on the back of seeing my dad the day before. So I thought, okay, I'm going to look out for that lad and, you know, take a bit more notice of him. There he is, charging down the right, cuts it back for Sam Smith to score the second goal. So, yeah, he knows a thing or two, does Harry. Yeah, it was just a case of Cambridge just being really determined, showed great desire to win the game, and Posh not being at it. If ever there was a case of a team not looking like they fancied it, it was Peterborough here, which is, you know, alarming really for Darren Ferguson. He won't be happy. You know, we've sung their praises lately, but this one didn't go well, and he changed to a back three in the second half. I think Mason Clark, who Sam did a scouting report on last week, got moved to the right, didn't really click for them. It was just one of those days where nothing really happened for Peterborough United. Cambridge got two goals, and the rest of the game was just a scrap and a battle. And that's how it is in derby games, isn't it? So well done. 10 points from 12. They're starting to believe, I think, at the Abbey that the great escape is on. That point at Bolton was massive. I'd never expected them to get that. So 4 points from those two games, with Wickham now coming up at home, not on the best run themselves. There is an opportunity here for Cambridge to save themselves. As for Peterborough, I think you've got to question a little bit of their mettle here. You know, I would look for a reaction because they didn't fancy it. Also, I say that because their record when they concede first is bad, like really, really bad. They haven't come from behind to win a game since October the 25th, haven't come from behind to even get a point since Boxing Day, Peterborough. So, yeah. He'll be looking for a bit more character, I think, from his players.
The game we're going to look at in League Two involves Bradford City, still in the hunt for automatic promotion after winning at National League bound Rochdale. 3-0 to the Bantams here. So an easy afternoon for City keeper Harry Lewis, who enjoyed his day in Lancashire.
Oh, class. The whole day, the whole day has just been mint. Like, the performance, the win, the clean sheet, the fans, everything about today has been class. Like, we've had some good days, we've had some bad days, but we've had some good days, and this day is right up there.
Love that. Lovely quote from Harry there. So Bradford then, Sam, 6, only 2 points off third place Stevenage, only lost twice this year, unbeaten in 11. Are they going to be the stealth team that comes up and pinches third place?
Yeah, I think they've got a good chance. I'm still on the, obviously, on the Stockport wagon. Like, I can't go back on what I've been preaching throughout the campaign, all about Dave Challoner and his boys. But, yeah, no, I like Bradford. I think this has been, yeah, a bit of a surprise for everyone. And I think there's been a lot of, disappointment. I think there's been a lot of upheaval at Bradford the last few years. So to see the fans fully behind the manager and the team feels quite fresh. And it's a team playing really good football. This was another very good victory. I didn't think they played brilliantly in this game, but they are, with Orient, the form side in the division. Last 12, 24 points Orient, Bradford, 23 points. Away from home, magnificent. Same away points as Orient, 36, actually got one more away from Valley Parade. So it's actually on the road that they've had more joy this season. And I think importantly in this game, I mean, Harry Lewis is right to highlight. I think he's probably pushed Lawrence Vigouroux for the best goalkeeper in the division, getting goals from elsewhere, not being reliant on Andy Cook, who, of course, has been, you know, their talisman, taken out of the side for that period during January, come back in, great goal scoring form. But yeah, two midfielders really good, Killiehead and Smallwood in this game at the weekend. Killiehead was a winger, if you remember, at Scunthorpe, and a good one at that. And playing in midfield, driving forward with the ball, can take people on. Smallwood gives you a little bit of security in there. So yeah, they're a good side. Games in hand on Northampton, Stockport, Carlisle, play Northampton in a few weeks' time. Next two, Swindon Town away from home. Swindon, 17th best team in front of their own fans this season. You have to fancy Bradford going there. And then Gillingham at home, Gillingham with a second worst away record in a division. So two games that I'm sure Mark Hughes will fancy taking maximum points of before that huge Northampton game.
And as for Rochdale, 8 points from safety, only four games left to play.
So yeah, just a line on them, Matt. I think they're still trying to play Rochdale. So you've got one set of supporters that are really enjoying a new brand of football at Bradford. And I think at Rochdale, you've probably got a majority there that are a bit kind of, you know, do we have to play it through the thirds? You know, we're in disarray. You know, have we got the players to do this? Get it forward a little bit. So it's funny how, you know, it's not really worked at Rochdale under a few managers, but Mark Hughes, yes, with better resources, has been able to change things. You think of Phil Parkinson at Bradford, you know, it's chalk and cheese, really, from the success they had under him in terms of the style.
All right, might be two divisions between those two next season then. We shall see. Next today, we're going to do our scouting reports. Adrian, Nathan Teller. He might well be back in the Championship next season, poor lad, if Southampton recall him. So it's kind of a pertinent one to do, but he's been ripping it up for Burnley this season, and he's the subject of your scouting report.
Yeah, I do think that Southampton made a huge mistake letting Nathan Teller go out on loan to Burnley. I think he could have made some kind of impact in the Premier League, more of an impact than some of the attackers that they've spent an awful lot of money on signing this season. He's been a revelation, Nathan Teller. 17 goals, 5 assists on an open play per 90 basis. He's third behind Chuba Akpom and Ross Stewart in terms of the number of goals he scores, you know, each 90 minutes from open play. He is a real threat. What I love about Nathan Teller and why he's maybe one of the most underrated front players in the Championship is that he can score goals from anywhere. And by anywhere, I mean playing on the right side of the attack or on the left side of the attack, where he started the season before Zaruri really came to the fore. Started out on the left, scored goals from there, got shunted to the right, scored even more goals from there. And he's also scored goals from a striker's position and from a number 10 berth as well, and as a sub. So he's been a dream for Vincent Kompany this season. Obviously, he's got electric pace, so when he plays in one of those wide forward roles, he joins in as that second centre forward brilliantly, makes some good runs, scores cheeky goals with his head inside the 6-yard box. But a lot of the goals where he runs inside a fullback and just finishes. And I've looked at every goal of his and they're all crisp finishes, usually low and hard, mainly right-footed. He has scored a few of his left. But yeah, he is sharp with a capital S. And I'll tell you who he reminds me of, Nathan Teller. Jermaine Defoe. He's very, very similar. He's obviously in stature, but when Defoe used to scamper away from the last man, you always fancied him. You always thought, yeah, he's going to bury this. And that's how I feel when I watch Nathan Teller. So yeah, he's had a brilliant season and he deserves to be in the Premier League next season. It'd be interesting to see if Burnley try to sign him permanently.
That's Nathan scouted. Tell us another one, Sam.
Yeah, Ali Alhamidi at AFC Wimbledon. I don't think we've got the time today, but really interesting backstory. He's an Iraqi international, grew up in Liverpool, was at Tranmere and Swansea in the youth team. Sorry, I'm telling you the story here, aren't I? But I mean, there's more to it. So go back and have a read if you're interested. He signed for Wickham November 2021, and he's only recently joined AFC Wimbledon. And he's got 9 goals in his first 13 appearances. Just for a bit of context, he's scoring every 135 minutes. Cookie, who I mentioned previously today, goal every 120 minutes. So he's not far behind the highest marksman in the division. And I saw him briefly against Walsall. He was making his comeback that night, so just came off the bench after he'd been out with a little niggle. And the first thing that struck me, he was the first Wimbledon player really in that game when they were not under the cosh, but playing, you know, a little bit direct and trying to get up the pitch. Really good touch, really good awareness, winning his headers, you know, guiding them towards teammates, and clearly got eye for goal. Very, very good finisher. 5 with his right foot, 3 with his left, 1 header. What I liked above anything, and I thought this was the case, having, you know, seen the goals, doing the ITV show and watching a few highlights, all in the box, 3 in the 6-yard box. Really cute movement in between centre-halves. Loves pulling around the far post and attacking the ball. Some nice ones in there. There was one where he had to stretch the play against Mansfield at home, had the pace to get onto the ball, shifted it and shot from just inside the box. But invariably, they're getting across people. They're one-touch finishes. He's doing them really well. And already, he looks to be playing well below the level that he's capable of. So probably another one that Johnny Jackson's going to have to do well to keep hold of. The one, it's not on him really, but the goals have only been worth 2 points. So that's probably a huge frustration to Jacko above him. I know what goal scorers are like. As long as you've notched, you're relatively content on a Saturday night. But goals against Stevenage, 3 of them now, 1 against Mansfield, 1 against Salford. He's doing it against the better teams in the division. So he's had a remarkable start to life at Wimbledon.
The big clubs will have seen this, obviously, in the Championship and in League One. What do you think they're going to offer? Because someone will make an offer for him. What kind of valuation do you put on a player that's pretty much a rookie, but clearly very talented?
Yeah, I think he had maybe a dozen games at Bromley on loan from Wickham. I think it coincided with him the FA Trophy. I've not dug enough into that, but scored a few goals there. And then Wimbledon have obviously seen something in him. And that's it. That's kind of the basket that Wimbledon, I think I alluded to it on the previous pod. You know, they've taken loan players from kind of League One clubs this year. They're not taking Premier League loanees. It's all relevant, isn't it? And they've obviously seen something in this lad, probably in a reserve game or something, taking a punt on him. And as I've said often as well in the last few years, score a dozen goals relatively quickly in the Football League now, you get flogged. It's not like it was in my day where you had to notch 75 of them, Clarkey, before you got anywhere near a move. So yeah, people were taking note of him, but hopefully he can stay. Hopefully, you know, because he's a mate of mine, Jacko's going to have an opportunity to build in the summer, and if he can get better players around him, he'll be up the higher echelons of the division rather than down in the bottom half.
All right, well, we'll wait and see with that one, I guess. So it's Nathan Teller and Ali Alhamadi, the subjects of this week's scouting reports. Nearly time to go, but we've got a tweet of the week. It comes from Newport's Cameron Norman. This after their victory at the weekend, which pretty much keeps them safe. Exactly the reaction we wanted. Another big 3 points at home, flames emoji. I hope the post is all right. Had to keep the clean sheet, laughing emoji. Emoji, is that? At Newport County, Amber Heart, Black Heart. Interesting thing about this, Sam, he's referenced something that happened in the game. He made a goal line clearance, collided with the post. But also, he's included a photo of a teammate celebrating a goal with him joining the celebration. Is that a booking? I mean, you know, he's to the uneducated like me who have to Google image Cameron Norman, I was like, he didn't score in this game, did he? And no, he didn't. He's just piggybacking off somebody else's success. Do you rate that? Do you slate that?
I'm glad you gave me the context, because I thought you said, I hope the postie's all right, which I was very, very confused about. He was expecting a delivery. Well, he searched high and low for it. Is that a bad thing that he's had to go looking for the photo? He's had to do a little bit of graft. I'm not going to give him any stick for that. There's not. I like the photo above anything else, to be completely frank. There's not much in there in terms of the text that I'm enjoying. So the photo pulls it up probably to around about a 5. So work to do, and I'll have to go and dig out that footage of the post incident, because you've drawn my attention to it, and I'm obsessed now.
You don't need to dig very deep. Martin King's The First Reply has put a video of it up, so you can see him colliding with the post.
Is it Phil Babb, or has he missed the post?
It's not quite Babb territory, I don't think. I just wonder, Clark, if it's a bit of a humble brag. Had to keep the clean sheet. Hope the post is all right. Listen, guys, I'm literally putting my body on the line just so that we get the zero in the against column.
Definitely. It's definitely a humble brag. It's just reminding everyone, isn't it, that, yeah, I've put my my privates on the line for us today, and I hope you appreciate it. So yeah, look, I've got no issue with it. I think it's a little bit different, isn't it? And yeah, well played.
Well done, Cameron. Speaking of social media, Adrian, tell everybody how they can find us there on.
Yes, it's at What the EFL on Instagram and TikTok. We'll be putting regular videos up of us recording the show. Hopefully we'll get some extra bits at some point or the other. But yeah, we need to actually probably sit down and have a chat about that. On Twitter, we're at EFL What the.
We sure are. And a reminder before we go of the offer from our friends at Quinbet. They have enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this podcast. It's 18+. And remember, always gamble responsibly. That will do it for us today then. Thanks to Adrian and Sam. If you fancy giving us a nice review on iTunes, if you think we're worth it, or a 5-star rating on Spotify or whatever your podcast platform of choice is, we would surely appreciate it. We'll be back next week. I'm guessing there'll be a fair few things sorted by then in terms of promotion and relegation. Big midweek of action coming up too. Enjoy that if you're at a game. We'll speak to you soon. Bye for now.